welcome to another edition of the Dog and Pony Show. My name is Richard Gintout, and my guests today are the Ants from Lawrence, Kansas. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, gentlemen?
I'm Chad.
I'm Brad.
Okay, and tell me a little bit about what you do in the Ants.
This is Chad. I play guitar and sing.
Okay.
And I do everything else.
Okay.
And what I don't do, I make the other people do.
So sort of a motivator, general producer. That's what the word for it is in the music business, right?
Right.
Producer. You make things happen.
We figured after several failures initially that we needed a producer, so we brought Brad in, and he's been doing a pretty good job.
Cool.
Thanks.
Well, I am coming to this with a little bit of a background here in your records. I haven't seen you around town, which I apologize for, but you have a new record out, and it's called Chinese Democracy. Yeah. And I think we're going to cut to the chase and get that out of the way, because what the hell were you thinking?
I don't know how familiar you are with it, or the millions of people who are going to be tuning into the podcast today are, but Chinese Democracy is the working title of the Guns N' Roses album that has been in the works since like 1998. And they've spent like, I don't know. I mean, I've seen ridiculous amounts of money. They spent $20 million, and there's still no album. And The Offspring, so they were going to name their album Chinese Democracy just to kind of give them a jab. And it never happened. And so just being fans of Axl Rose in general, we figured that we would go ahead and show him how to make an album and call it Chinese Democracy.
Hmm. Have you heard back from him yet?
Not yet. We're waiting on the cease and desist letter, you know, but haven't gotten it yet.
I keep calling him, and he won't return my call.
So let's put out an advisory right now. Uh-huh. Axl, if you want to reach the Ants, you have richard@lawrence.com as your contact.
That's right.
Or you can call me direct. But
that's right.
I wouldn't mind having a conversation with you, too. I got some things to say.
Yeah, exactly. I think we all do.
What would you say to Axl if he called you?
Oh, I don't know. I'd probably ask him about his gospel roots in Indiana, you know. Ask him about the big changeover. See what happened when he walked off that bus in L.A., you know. And
I'd probably ask him what happened to his face.
Yeah.
Because he looks a lot different. He looks more like Michael Jackson.
That's what I was wondering,
than
too.
Axl Rose.
Yeah, he does kind of look like Michael. Yeah, some might ask him about Michael and whether or not they have a relationship and what kind of skin cleanser he's using and that kind of a thing.
Probably proactive.
Proactive, yeah skin cleanser. Exactly.
Because Puff Daddy uses proactive and a lot of other big name celebrities use proactive.
Yeah, yeah.
So probably Axl Rose's too.
Yeah.
Are you actually the first group, though, to release an album called Chinese Democracy?
Yeah. Think so,
as far as we know.
You've put them in quite a tight spot, huh?
Haven't we? I mean, I know that once they do finally come out with it, everybody will, you know, the people who will be at the record store buying the album will probably be, you know, pretty upset, you know, by the fact that they went ahead and named their album Chinese Democracy. Oh, you know the Ants. Shit, they already put out an album called Chinese Democracy. These guys are sorry, you know? I mean, I don't know.
Hmm. We'll How do you compare your album, Chinese Democracy, to what you imagine that Guns N' Roses Chinese Democracy will sound like, or perhaps you've heard leaked samples of that? Can you compare the Ants to New GNR?
I think it's pretty much the same. I think they're right on line with each other.
Okay.
I actually co-opted a couple of the lyrics that I'd found online. So, for instance, Mamacita, that's actually written by Axl Rose, just the lyrics, and we just kind of went in and fixed it up, and I don't know. There's that slash simulator that you can get on Pro Tools. So we use the slash simulator for the guitar parts. And I don't know. I think he has the guy from Nine Inch Nails playing drums. So we tried to think about that quite a bit. And Buckethead plays some guitar, I think, on the new one. So I put a bucket over my head when we were recording it.
We all tried the bucket on, but it fit Chad best.
Fit like a glove, as a matter of fact.
So the real story of the Ants is that you are a band that has been kicking around Lawrence for how long now?
2001. So four years. Yeah.
Okay. And my impression is that it's a very loose association of musicians. It's a little bit open as far as who's going to play on the record and who's going to be in the band for a given show.
It has been up to this point, but like for the last year, we've had the same lineup. And when it first started, it was like just like so many other bands are. And you know, I had some songs. I wanted to put the songs together. Called in all my favorite players and friends, and just put it together. And and we kind of followed that same routine for three albums and did some tours and followed that same routine there where we just, you know, put it together. Whoever can go, let's go. You know, let's rehearse for a couple of weeks and then hit the road. And for the last year, though, we've had the same solid lineup, and we've gotten a couple tours out, and we've done a little bit of recording, but we're gonna hit recording hard in March, and with the same solid lineup. So hope, maybe with an eye toward trying to get away from that kind of loose assemblage of people. It's kind of almost become a detriment to music, I think, is that, you know, people don't really focus on the one project. Everybody's involved in five different projects, and you know, everybody can record at home, so everything's so immediate, and there's not so much of a focus on the music. You're not digging in, you're not really tearing the music apart and realizing its potential. And so I kind of felt like that was a weakness in what we had done, and wanting to move on and grow a little bit and do something different. So consistency is the new, you know, the new strategy, I guess.
Okay, cool. Well, let's pause to listen to the first track from your new record, Chinese Democracy, okay. Which is called...
The first track is Cold Duck. Cold Duck is a malt liquor beverage.
Cool.
Yeah.
Here it is, Cold Duck.
Okay.
Parking lot by the highway, feathers roll along the concrete. He wore a ring with a gold lion's head, and he said, happiness is not as important in Japan. Difference between happiness and satisfaction. Happiness and satisfaction put some seeds down, and the birds come and steal them off the ground. You put some seeds in the dish, and the birds come and spit the seeds out. Thank you.
That was Cold Duck by The Ants, and we are back on the Dog and Pony Show with our special guests, Chad and...
Brad.
Thank you, Brad. And let's talk a little bit about your approach to recording, to composing. You, when I initially heard The Ants, it brought to mind a little bit The Mountain Goats. I think I dropped a name like that. As far as homespun... You know, let's include whatever we can find lying around the house in the recording. Definitely not a big time studio work here, though. There's a little bit more polish perhaps on this. Tell me about your general philosophy when it comes to putting together a record.
Well, I think the whole polish thing comes from just not having the budget to to polish things up. You know, to get into a big studio. You know, we mainly record at home studio spaces or. Except for the first thing that Chad recorded, which was a real studio,
right? But which is not to say it's bad. I'm not saying it's you know, bad lo-fi.
Yeah.
But it is lo-fi, sort of. You know, I mean, in that sort of 2005 way.
Yeah, it's and you're right. You know, we like to kind of keep it random, and I guess the philosophy going in to the first album was that was recorded in California. I lived out there for a while, and. We recorded at the Music Annex, which is this ridiculous studio, you know, like a, you know, $200 an hour studio with, you know, multiple 2-inch machines and every microphone on the planet and, you know, giant rock rooms, you know. And we recorded that, which was ironically is the least of a band kind of a recording in that I tracked guitar and vocals and then I brought in people to just... You know, put the gravy on top of it. You know, jingling bells and singing along and putting you know, synthesizer tracks, and that was basically the concept. There was let's just get these songs out there and have all my good friends come in. I was leaving California to move back to Kansas. I kind of wanted to document, just a selfish kind of project to do, just to have as a document of all these good people who I had met and playing music with them. As we moved on, we did Sparkling Disaster Strategies, which was our first album on Sick Room. And we recorded the bulk of that at Dan Burton's house in Bloomington, Indiana. And Dan has a working home studio. He's recorded Papa M and Will Oldham and Songs Ohio. And he's recorded some heavy hitters, Nels Klein, people like that. But it's Pro Tools. It's a basement, you know, with 8-foot ceilings. And so, you know, it's not going to be – the fidelity's not, you know, it's not RCA kind of stuff. And that was a band recording. And the philosophy there was we played one show, our first show ever, as a 3-piece without a drummer in Ames, Iowa. We'd been practicing. How many practices did we have?
9, I think.
We had 9 practices. And then we went to Chicago and played the Big Horse Lounge, which is in the back of a taco restaurant in Chicago. Had our friend Mitch come in and set in and play drums. From Mitch plays in Sweep the Leg Johnny and Rumasaki are his bands of note. And so then he set in with us. We rehearsed for a few days in Chicago, rehearsed the album, drove down to Bloomington and recorded it in a few days, and then added a few 4-track songs on there. You know, that same kind of stuff like you're talking about, man. Just, you know, like I was cursing earlier, the immediacy of recording something right now. You know, you're feeling it, maybe you're at home late at night, you push the record button, you know, you want to go ahead and do the song, and then, you know, all of a sudden, you know, 5 or 6 tracks later, you're you know, you got what you want. And so that was kind of that was that album. And then the Victory Side was much the same. We recorded at David Moore's house in Merriam. He's recorded The Hearers and I don't know who all he's recorded, a bunch of different people. Drakkar Sauna, he's a good guy, he's an old head from around town. And we recorded 6 or so songs there as a band, and then added a bunch of 4-track stuff. And you know, so it just kind of has this thrown together kind of a feel to it, you know, which is good and bad. But I don't know. We try to group songs together that have some sort of relationship. It's not just a giant collage. But at the same time, that's probably the overriding kind of thing you come away with, is that it's just a cross section of this you know, of maybe this idea or this entity here. And I don't know. That's kind of how we approach it so far.
It's a pretty narrative flow to your songwriting, you know, almost like little miniature fiction short stories sometimes. Tell me a little bit about who a couple of your favorite songwriters are, and, you know, if you have any philosophy when it comes to penning lyrics.
I like Lou Reed, you know, a lot. I like Tom T. Hall, you know, the old country songwriter. He writes just silly, kind of good-natured stories, you know. And, you know, Neil Young and the Minutemen, you know, Mike Watt. Brad, who are you down with?
Yeah, all those things. Well, I don't really write the songs if you're just talking about lyrics, you know.
Yeah, so I know, but still. I mean, I write everything with you in mind, though.
Well, thanks. they're all about me.
Yeah, and since he's the producer, he has the word of, you know, yes or no, take that out. The philosophy behind penning the lyrics is kind of like, they're almost like dream books, you know. I mean, I rarely would sit down and say, you know, goddamn, I'm missing my girlfriend, and I really want to write a song about that, you know. I mean, not that there's anything wrong with that, because that's the heart and soul of what most popular music's about. But I tend to kind of go with more of a stream of consciousness kind of philosophy. I like beat writers, and I like Henry Miller, and I don't know. The narrative quality, yeah, it's definitely there, because I sit down with a pen and a notebook and let it go, and then maybe I go back to it and try and figure out what I was thinking and what I was talking about. Usually the lyrics come first, and then the melody is kind of almost simultaneous when you get that inspiration to sit down with the guitar. And and then lately, as we've been working more as a consistent lineup, we've been taking that stuff from its pretty raw form, which would be your chords and your lyrics and the basic melody, and bringing it to the band and really, you know, tearing it up and getting into four-part harmonies and starting to try and figure out some, you know, counter melody lines off the piano and trying to include some, just trying to make it a little bit more broad of a composition, instead of just maybe learning the song and getting it out there. Instead of just doing that, trying to really broaden the scope of it and develop it a little bit more. And but for the most part, it's sitting in a room and you know, having a couple of beers, and when it strikes you, and you just go for it, you know?
Old-time religion. Old-time religion. Old-time religion.
It's the honest and natural decision. If I'm ever gonna realize the vision of how it should be, free and easy.
Not a question, really. Why?
Lawrence, and I was about 4 years out of college. I moved down to Texas and was coaching high school football, and I was down there and met a girl, and she was originally from California, so Brad was moving to California, and we just kind of, she graduated, I decided, let's go on out there, you know, and we went to California, stayed there for 5 years, and
I didn't stay there for 5 years.
That's right.
I was there a matter of months because I can't stand the girl that he married.
Yeah, well, that's all right. And we were there, and
don't take this too critically or anything, but I think your football figure has deteriorated.
Yeah,
a little bit. Have you kind of laid off the roids?
Like, yeah, I have. As a matter of fact, I switched to Ephedra, and so. We'll see how that goes.
Is it kind of like Friday Night Lights down there?
Yeah, it is. It is. Really? Yeah, it
have
is.
Have you seen that movie?
Yeah, totally. That's the idea. It's very competitive. It's like professional football. The whole town comes out, and like the National Guard comes out. They drive the tanks on the field. It's pretty crazy. And so we were out there for a while chasing our rock and roll dreams, and then moved back to Kansas because I had we had another kid, and so that
was collectively, like as a unit,
yeah,
do you raise children as well as being a band? Or?
I have seven seven children by four different marriages, and we were getting kind of crowded in the. We were living in a two bedroom apartment down in Redwood City, above some crazy old women, and they were getting tired of all the noise, and there was no way we were going to upgrade our living situation, and so it was just kind of like, let's move back to Kansas where we can actually sustain ourselves, and. That was pretty much it, you know. It was like we'd kind of run our course out there and decided that it was time to come back to Kansas and be nearer the rest of our family. And
do you think this is a good community to raise your extended aunt's family in?
Yeah, I think so.
It does all right.
Yeah, it does all right. It's better than Brooklyn as far as that goes for me because in Brooklyn, for instance, I have to walk about an hour every place and then I have to wait in line for an hour when I get there and. Here in Kansas, I just jump in my Hummer, you know, and drive down to Total, pick up a carton of cigarettes, you know. I mean, if that's what I got to do, you know, it doesn't take so long. Something basic is breaking me. I feel like a dying tree. Skin that's containing me. Peel away the scenery. I've got a lot of love, but I am not keeping up. Maybe.
From the same dead stash, calling on the same great ghost, drinking up the cheapest wine, standing in the pouring rain, standing in a metal bucket below the electrical lights, standing in a metal bucket. Mother Nature. Light up this dark old room. I want to feel something new. I want to be moved by you. Burn out my insides. Make me forget my name. Plant me in a cornfield and grow me. Mama Sita, do not choke me.
Right now, Brad works as a Republican operative in Operation Rescue, right? You go and lobby the Republican Party on behalf of Operation Rescue?
Yes.
Yeah. Sean, who's our drummer, is a map maker. And Dave, he owns a hotel up there on the plaza, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I work at Midwest Gun, and I clean guns for a living. I just kind of like walk around and clean the guns, dust the guns off, and do that 40 hours a week. And then we play music as much as we can and get out of town as much as we can. We have a van that we bought a few years ago, and we log a lot of mileage on it. And when it breaks down, then Brad fixes it. We have a toolbox. What else do we do around town?
I drink a lot of beer.
We drink beer.
I smoke cigarettes occasionally.
What is the best beer in town, and where do you get it?
I wouldn't say it's the best beer. I drink a lot of Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Yeah.
Because it's the cheap beer in town.
Yeah.
I've been trying to say you really wanted style. It was a special night. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it was the record release show for Chinese Democracy.
Okay.
What would you have?
I probably wouldn't have a beer.
Yeah, I'd drink vodka.
Yeah, yeah, I'd probably have
straight.
Straight.
Probably soda.
Vodka soda.
Yeah.
Some Patron and pineapple juice. Yeah. That's what Sean and Dave would be having.
Yes, they would. They're big tequila drinkers.
Yeah, we played a hurricane benefit in Chicago recently, and there's a tequila bar down the street from the Subterranean where we played, and we had the opportunity to go patronize the tequila bar before our set commemorating the hurricane victims, and that was fun. We did a pretty good job there. I'm sure they liked having us around.
Like $12 drinks.
Yeah. $12 tequila.
I only had one.
Yeah. I can't say that, unfortunately, but yeah, it was fun. Yeah, if I was going to have a special drink, you know, maybe a car bomb and then a couple of vodkas, you know, line some vodkas up on the table.
Just a funnel with some beer.
A funnel with some beer, exactly. And a colostomy bag. Yeah.
I think that's about time to wrap it up right there. Once,
thanks, Richard.
Once that starts getting in the conversation. Thank you, fellas.
Thanks for having us.
Again, go see The Ants at the Replay Lounge on November 11th with Old Mossy Face.
Right on.
And thanks for listening. See ya.